Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and we're very excited today by our special guest that we have in collaboration with the Texas A&M Coaching Academy. Today we have Mr. Justin Moore with us, who is the Associate Athletic Director for Football at Texas A&M. Welcome to the podcast, Justin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're really happy to have you. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you, and then we'll just jump into our conversation. As Associate Athletic Director for Football at Texas A&M, Justin, he works alongside Coach Kevin Sumlin here to run the football team. He's been with Coach Sumlin since he was at the University of Houston. He served as the Director of Football Operations there and then as Assistant AD for football. He was a Special Assistant to the Senior Associate Athletic Director here at A&M before that. He has a Bachelor's Degree in Finance and a Master's in Sports Management from Texas A&M. He was Captain of the Aggie Baseball Team. He was a freshman All-American pitcher, All-Big 12 team, recipient of the university's Pat Olson Most Valuable Player Award, named to the academic All-Big 12 team for four straight years, and has an interesting side and worked as a risk consultant for Deloitte LLP. And he's here at A&M. So welcome again to the podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. We wanted to talk to you about what do you do? As the Associate Athletic Director for football.
That's a great question.
There's a lot of background people that work. And, you know, on TV we see the coach. We see, of course, the players and the athletic trainers when they run out to help somebody.
Sure.
So, but big-time college football is a big operation.
Absolutely.
A lot of people to make this thing work right.
That's right. I oversee all of the day-to-day operations of the football department, which includes the budget, all the purchasing, the scheduling, facilities, academics, all the things that go into the student athlete's life. And then I also oversee the administrative side of recruiting, which is what most people want to talk about and think is kind of the cool thing. But and probably the easiest way to put it would be I oversee everything except coaching a position. So anything that's not coaching related on the field would fall under my role. But like you said, there's a lot of really talented and important people that go into that, and we've got about 15 full-time staff that work just in that area that don't have anything to do with the actual coaching of the team. So it is a big operation. There's a lot of people that do a lot of really good work and keeps everybody pretty busy.
Now, you've been involved in this for a while. Mm-hmm. It is my impression that side of football, college football in particular, has really grown over the last 10 to 15 years. Is that true, or is that just a misperception?
No, that's absolutely true. And really, it's grown probably the most in the last 3 to 4 years. And recently, the NCAA has changed some legislation that's allowed you to add some positions that before were prohibited. So even on the field coaches, we've now gone from 2 graduate assistants to 4. Which has helped, and then but non on the field positions has grown tremendously, so much so that we're going through a renovation of the Bright Complex because we don't have near enough office space. Because when the building was built 10 years ago, staff sizes were completely different than they are now. And so we've added some really key staff members, but we've got to find a place to put them.
space is always a problem on university campus,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Then we'll get to parking, figure out where they're going to park.
That's another story. Well, that's another podcast altogether, right? So is this growth in staffing, is that due to increases in compliance rules from NCAA, the complexity of the game, the complexity of the whole process?
It's not because of compliance rules. It's more about the complexity of the game and just the how competitive it is at this level, and the margin for error, or the thing, the the thing that separates you from the next team is so small now that people are just looking for that the next advantage. And so you're starting to see big-time college programs' office structure look almost like an NFL team. So we're getting towards that model more so than what most people are used to. The biggest difference that I'm not sure will ever change is in professional sports, professional football, the scouting department and the coaching department are completely separate. And the scouts select and pick the players, and the coaches just kind of coach who they get.
In
college, that's not the case. The coaches make the final decision on the players that they want to sign, recruit, and then sign so that they're comfortable with who they're coaching. And so that's the biggest difference in professional football and in college football. But other than that, the departments are starting to look really similar.
So how did you get into this? You were a baseball player. And you kind of, you know, we think of this as different, you know, to transition into football or whatever. And you were certainly not working in the athletic field for a while. And so how did you wind up doing this?
Yeah, it's I get that question a lot because I have an unusual background for this position. But now being in the position, it's actually the perfect background. Now, I didn't know that at the time. It just kind of worked out that way. But so I was playing baseball here at A&M. Like all college baseball players, thought I was going to play baseball forever. Ended up having a shoulder injury, had surgery, and got a job working for Deloitte, which is a big four public accounting firm. I realized about 2 weeks into that, that's not what I wanted to do. But everybody,
you missed the smell of grass, right?
Yeah, just missed. I mean, my whole life I had, it was all about sports. You know, I played football, basketball, and baseball all the way through high school, and just missed being around sports, and that's what I was that's what I was passionate about. So I decided I knew I wanted to get back into sports. I just didn't know exactly how or exactly what I wanted to do. But I had everybody telling me if you spend 2 years at a big four accounting firm and you have that on your resume, you can get a job for the rest of your life. So I stuck it out for the magical 2 years, and while I was doing that, I was really just trying to research and figure out what I wanted to do and how best to get back into athletics. And so I decided that the path was I was going to go to graduate school here at A&M, and I was able to get a job working in the athletic department because in this industry, experience is so important, more so than what's on your resume. So I was able to get a good job, getting to see a lot of different things in athletics, and did that for about 2 years as I was going to school. And Coach Sumlin at the time was at Oklahoma, and my wife and his wife were good friends. They had, when he was an assistant coach here, was that 12 or 13 years ago now, his wife, they had a membership out at the Pebble Creek Country Club. My wife actually worked out there, and that's how they first met and became really good friends. So we stayed in touch, and I had got a chance to be around him a couple times. So we knew each other a little bit and kind of followed each other's careers. When he got the job at Houston, I had just finished grad school, and we ended up going to dinner and spent a lot of time with each other. And he said, you know, he said, I have a position that you would be perfect for. And I didn't even know what he was talking about. And he said, send me your stuff on, send me your resume and your stuff on Monday. I still didn't know what he was talking about. So I did some research on it and figured it out. And I said, you know what, this would be really, really good. So then I, you know, started talking to some people that I trusted and that knew a lot about it, and sent him my stuff, and went down and interviewed with him and the athletic director for a day or so, and got the job. I come to find out that he had, we knew a lot of the same people, and he had done an extensive background check on me. I didn't find that out until later, and fortunately it checked out. But so that's how we I first got in. And Coach, I'll give Coach Sumlin credit because the position is not an X's and O's position, so it doesn't require great football expertise, but it's really more of a business position. And I had a business background, and that's what he wanted. And so it really was the perfect fit, and he and I couldn't fit better with each other now. And so we're, you know, best friends, and we spend more time with each other than our wives, unfortunately. So,
well, you talk about the good fit. You're with your experience, especially with your undergraduate degree, and that your years in business, and what you said your job responsibilities are. It does seem like a great fit.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It is. You know, just with especially at a place like Texas A&M, it's football. You're dealing with a large budget, and you know, fortunate to have a finance background. I was, you know, did some auditing work, and so I've seen a lot of budgets, and just a lot of my job is almost HR related, and personnel and hiring and that type of stuff. So it's like I said, I didn't map it out that way on purpose, but like a lot of things, it works out how it's supposed to. And I look back and think it was great experience the way I got here.
We have a lot of listeners that are doing their undergraduate or their students. And that's one of the reasons we ask these questions is because they want to know, you know, how do they become the next Justin Moore? And one of the things that our podcast guests continue to say when we ask the question is meet as many people as you can.
That's right.
Know everyone you can. Build that network. And that certainly sounds like the case that helped.
You know what? It takes a little bit of luck to kind of get sometimes in front of somebody, but obviously – your reputation and the work you've done to that point is going to come into play at some point. So I'd say a couple things. One is whatever you do, do absolutely your best job at it, no matter what it is. I had someone tell me some great advice one time. They said if someone tells you to go outside and pick up rocks, you'd be the best rock picker-upper they've ever seen. And it's funny, but in this industry it's so true because there are so many people that want to get into sports, and they're willing to do a lot to get in. And most of the time it's for free at the beginning or the pay is really low. So to be able to separate yourself, you can't – there cannot be a question of your work ethic or I'm above that. That can't even come into question. So you have to be willing to do whatever it is and to do it better than they've ever seen it done before. And then that will just even get you in a position to maybe get a full-time job or a paying job. And you're right, this industry is so much more about who you know and the relationships that you build with people, because nobody, I should say, most people are not going to hire somebody either they don't know or that they don't know someone really well that knows them, because it's such a trust industry, especially in coaching where, you know, there's a lot of turnover. Guys are hired and fired based on results. And so they might, they're going to look at it and say, okay, I've got this job as the head coach at XYZ. This is my only shot. If I'm going to win or lose, I'm going to at least do it my way with my people.
Yeah.
And so they've got to trust you.
Yeah.
And to do that, they either have to know you or know someone really, really well that trusts you and knows you. So,
I mean, there is a lot riding on these positions. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, we think of it, you know, people from the outside look at it and go, well, it's just a game. It's just wins and losses. But these are people's lives because universities more and more are willing to – ditch everybody and start all over again,
that's
aren't
right.
they?
It's good and bad. The more money that is involved now, the higher the risk. And but you know what? We know that when we sign up for it, and that's part of the job. And you know, it is. But you're right. That's a great point. I think a lot of times fans or just people watching think, well, it's just a game, and they can't imagine why certain decisions are made or why they would do this or that. But this is, you know, people's livelihoods, and there's a lot of that goes into these decisions, and usually a lot of things that people don't see. But it's a great industry. It's a fun industry, and, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
It's like being with the circus, though, around here most of the time nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah. I tell you what, it's changed so much even from when I was in school and as a player, and baseball is obviously is not near as visible as football, but even knowing the football guys, you didn't have Twitter, you didn't have Instagram, you didn't have social media, you didn't have camera phones.
Right.
And so it's just changed now that the media attention and how everything is, you know, just instantaneous has really changed the sport and, you know, obviously society. But it's putting a lot on these young kids. It really is.
Yeah. And that's what we've said this before on podcasts is people forget how young these players are, whether it's male or female athletes.
That's right.
They are 18 to 22 years old.
Yep.
And sometimes we expect them to act like they're 30 already.
That's right. And for us, I would bet you 80% of our guys are from non-traditional homes, from different backgrounds, where a lot of times it's our job to teach them, mold them, and educate them on what is right and wrong. And they truly don't know until they get here. They've never been told how to act or what's okay or what's not. And so that's a huge part of our job. To be honest with you, coaching the X's and O's part, the coaches will tell you, that's the easy part. And they don't spend near enough time on that. It's all the other stuff that takes up most of your time.
Yeah. Well, speaking of change, last 2 years, you've been here a couple years now when Coach Sumlin came in. We've seen just a huge change in the football culture here for a variety of reasons. What has been the biggest challenge for you over this 2 years? Because, you know, 2 years ago, I can remember going into the stadium for the first game going, okay, new conference, new coach, new freshman quarterback. We have no clue what's going to happen. And here we are 2 years later with huge expectations. Yeah.
That was the biggest thing. And without question was changing people's attitude. We kind of joke, the Aggies look at it as it's always going to go bad.
Real fatalistic.
You know, we're up two touchdowns in the third quarter, but somehow we're going to screw this deal up, right, you know? Yeah. And I knew it because I lived it. I mean, I'd come to a lot of A&M football games growing up as a kid, and then I was obviously a student-athlete here and experienced it. And that was the biggest thing, was just to change people's mindset that it's not always going to go bad.
Right.
And don't look for reasons why it won't work, or don't say, well, we've always done it this way. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing was, hey, you've always done it that way, but honestly, for the last 30 years, you've been 500. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the whole thing, so if you don't want to be 500, we're going to have to do something a little bit different.
Right.
And so it took some – I think Coach did a great job of going about that the right way and not being just kind of over the top and saying, we're doing it this way because I said so. I mean, he has a great savvy about him, about kind of changing things, but also doing it in a way where you don't offend a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But that was the biggest challenge, without question, was making changes in things that have been going on for a long time, and then changing just the attitude of not just the athletic department and the players, but the fan base too, is, hey, it's going to be okay. And how about if we're down in the third quarter, we think, hey, we're going to come back and win the game. That's what we got to get to. And I think, like you said, and it's pretty amazing, in 2 years now, it's funny, we went from you guys are going to get killed in the SEC, you have no chance, to now the expectations that you should win every game.
That's,
you know,
right. That's
which
right.
is great. I mean, you'd rather have it that way.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about change, though, and people who aren't from A&M that or haven't been to A&M that are listening to this podcast, they may not understand, but tradition is a huge thing here.
Right.
And if something happens like 3 years in a row, it's a tradition
that's
around
right.
here, and people go, no, that you can't change that tradition.
Right.
And so to come in and change some of these things, yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That's a great point. It was – a lot of people have that same problem going into different organizations. Mm. But A&M is an extremely unique organization.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, everything's about tradition. And that was our point, was we don't want to change what makes A&M great. We're not trying to change traditions, but there are certain little things that aren't going to take away from A&M's tradition. If we wear a different uniform now and then, it's A&M's still going to be A&M.
Right,
it's still going to be
right.
really, you know, a great place. But to the kids and to the demographic we're trying to attract, that stuff's important.
Right.
And you have to understand that we've got to, if you want to be successful and you want to play at an elite level, there are certain things you're going to have to do to compete to get elite players. And so we have to figure out, how do we do that while still maintaining A&M's great tradition and their culture? So
yeah.
I think we've done a good job of that, and we'll continue to try to do that going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned the uniforms. The other thing that came to mind was you just changed where the players came in
right.
for the game.
Yeah.
Instead of coming into the south end zone, they come in from the northwest side of the stadium, and it's like now it's natural.
And, you know, people think that's a little thing, but – and that was Coach Sumlin's kind of – that was his baby. It just bugged him that the team entrance originally was just not – it wasn't a grand entrance.
Mm-hmm.
It was – you know, you could see the guys immediately when they came out of that door, and there just wasn't a lot of show to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to the players, just right before the game as they're about to play, kind of getting that feeling of the crowd and the excitement. And so we talked about it for a long time of how can we change our entrance based on kind of the setup of our stadium. And so, you know, we worked with 12th Man Productions and said, here's kind of what we want to do. And we came up with a plan. And they said, well, it's going to be, you know, it's about an 8-minute process. When people that don't know coaches well, as you get close to game time, those minutes are really important,
right.
you know, when you're in the locker room. And Coach said, that's okay. He said, I think it's going to be good. And when we practiced it a week or so before the first game with nobody in the stands, and all they had was the music and the video board playing so we could get the timing down. And it's the middle of the day, and we're walking with the kids in street clothes, and the kids were fired up. They're like, "Coach, this is awesome."
Ready to go right
and
now.
And we knew it. We said, "All right, we got it." And they were ready to go. It was that was neat. So
let's go.
Yeah.
So what jumps out at you right now? You talked about the kids there, and I call my students to kids. And yes, these are grown adults. Yes, we understand
that's
that.
Right.
So no one write in. We know that. But what differentiates the student athletes of your day when you were playing ball against the student athletes of today?
Wow. I'd say first thing that comes to mind is just the microscope that these kids now are under. That is a huge difference. I don't think people understand that. I mean, they almost have zero room for error, and a lot of times it's not fair. Sometimes they make bad decisions, absolutely, and they, you know, then there are consequences for those. But I don't think people understand what their day-to-day life is like with not being able to do anything that's not on camera or not seen or put on social media. That's probably the biggest difference from when I was in school to now. And you know, you always hear of kids are different now. They're just more entitled or they're this or that. But I don't think kids are different. I think the way that kids are raised are a little bit different. You know, you can still coach kids hard and require them to do a lot of things if they know that they can trust you. So that was a big thing that I think Coach did a great job of early, and the coaching staff is getting to know the kids personally and building a good relationship with them before we even started practice so that the kids could trust them and they believed them. And if they trust you, then you can coach them hard and you can get what you need out of them just like you could, whatever, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But they're just brought up a little bit different than they were, you know. It doesn't seem like that long ago.
No. I know one of the we've had guests on, and I know from my observations being in the classroom for the last 25 years or so, it seems like the coping capabilities that so many of our students now have are diminished.
Yeah.
And they haven't faced maybe as much adversity many times. Parents are very protective of them.
That's right.
And so it's like something happens and, you know, it's the end of their world. Mm-hmm. Or they have the video game mentality. Okay, I'll just restart and go over again.
And the thing that we're getting to now, when you recruit elite level players, is their whole life they've always been the best of the best, and so nobody's ever told them anything negative. They're just so the first time that happens, they almost look surprised, like they don't believe you. You know, like, hey, you have really bad body language right now, or whatever. And they're
who
like,
are you talking to?
What? You know, and so it's not that they mean, not that they want to, you know, be offended, but they're just surprised.
Yeah.
And so just changing sometimes the mentality of these kids is a little bit challenging.
Yeah, and you hear people talk about that. That's a big differentiator from the, you know, they've been all five-star, four-star, whatever,
right.
And they get here, they get to a university where they're playing with all five-star
that's right.
and four-stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the ones that can actually step up and continue to improve their game.
That's
at
exactly
that point.
Right. That's exactly right. For a lot of these kids, probably most of them, this is the first time they've ever been surrounded with players of equal or close to equal ability. And some of them can't handle that competition. They've never had to, and when it hits them in the face, they just don't know how to react. And the coping mechanism, like you talked about, and so they just either shut it down or, you know, go the wrong way. But the really good ones, they, you know, they thrive in that. And but that's a big deal and something that you don't really know in the recruiting process until you get them here. That's one of the challenges. That's why it's an inexact science. Is you just can't duplicate that until you put them in it.
Right. To maybe throw you a little bit of a curveball here, but this will be something that you've observed, I think. We talk a lot about the sports medicine aspect,
sure.
And you know, we've talked a lot about the concussions and yada yada and all that other stuff. And so, player safety is a huge deal now, and how the sports medicine side of the team is integrated into the coaching decisions.
Sure.
And I have been impressed with how that's done here at A&M. Is that similar to what you think goes on around the rest of the country? Or
I would hope so. Yeah. You know, you're right. That is such a it's just a touchy subject. And you're usually talking about issues that coaches don't know anything about.
Mm.
And the sports medicine people are the experts. And the coaches, obviously, they want their best players to play, and that's really their main concern. And so I think it's important that the sports medicine doctors, they have the final say, and they do here at A&M. So if the head trainer or the head team doctor says, he can't play, and he doesn't play. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's the way it is everywhere. I think it is at most places. But you'll always have places where, you know, the head coach is the most powerful guy in the room usually, and so they have a lot of influence.
Yeah.
We're fortunate. We've got a great sports medicine staff, and we work, you know, we have a great relationship. They're, you know, our head athletic trainer, David Weir, he's in our staff meeting every day. That's usually the first thing we go over is the medical report. And so what he says goes. And we have great communication. I think that's obviously key. But, you know, we kind of put that in their hands.
Yeah. It's been great having you here, Justin.
Sure.
Today. We thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
We're running short on time. And as we give all of our guests, though, we're going to give you an opportunity to give a take-home message. What if there's anything that you want people to remember from this conversation,
sure,
what would that be?
I would just say that in a football program like Texas A&M, there are a lot of people that go into putting the product on the field that you don't see or you don't know about, that work a ton of hours, that work extremely hard and do a great job, and that the product on the field would not be possible without their work. So I just want people to think about that when they go to the game and you look down on the sideline. There's a lot of guys wearing khakis and polos. Those guys do a lot of really good work to make what goes on the field possible, and they don't get as much credit as they deserve. So that's what I'd leave you with.
So it's a justified benefit to have a sideline view of the game, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
for
right.
All those hours.
That's right.
Absolutely. Again, thank you
absolutely
for being with us today. And I want to thank all of you for taking the time to download and listen to us today. And regular listeners of our podcast will know that this is the time where we have our podcast question of the week. And so with our podcast question of the week is our producer, Kelly.
What is the biggest difference within the departments of professional football and college football that will probably never change?
All right. Great podcast question of the week. Be the first one to email us the response to that, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts. That email address is huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. So again, thank you all for taking the time to download and listen. Please join us next week when we have another interesting person from the world of sports medicine and human performance. And until then, we hope you have an active and healthy week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Kelly Selman and Aidland Letzinger and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.